Budget Committee presentation, Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have, since everybody's here today, we certainly have a full committee. Their quorum is present. We have three action items. I'm going to kind of follow to a certain degree Dr. Vail's lead and discuss, or Jennifer discuss, the first item, which is approval of the 17-18 audit plan. It's pages 1 through 3 in the handout.
Thank you. Good morning. So you do have a draft of the audit plan with you. And in that audit plan, there is over 3,000 budgeted hours for projects, which includes a total of 16 projects and four other items that we will be doing, including our annual assessment, the administrative duties that we perform, any continued professional education that we do, and any ad hoc requests that may come up during the year. So out of those 16 projects, you'll see that at the top, one is a prior year project that's rolling forward that we did not get to this year, which is the inventory and surplus operational audit. So that'll be started hopefully soon. Seven of those 16 projects are next, the annual projects that we perform. Some of those include the NCAA work that we do. We help the external auditors do some of the agreed upon procedures. We look at that, the football ticket sales reconciliation for that as well. We continue to do the procurement card audits and compliance reviews throughout the year, and also the president's travel and entertainment audit. So those are some of those annual projects that are that remain on every audit plan. The remaining projects, the eight that are left, it's a mix of specific management requests, either requested audits or reviews, and other projects that were selected from the assessment. These projects cross multiple divisions, and they also cross multiple risk categories, including the operational, compliance, and financial risks. And I just wanted to highlight a few of these. I didn't want to go through every one of these specifically. We were asked, as part of the management request, we were asked to perform a operations audit of the clinical education complex. So we had that request that happened throughout the year. We've also been asked to verify commission payments outlined in the university contract with the dining services. That was also a management-specific request that I have on there. Some of the other ones from the assessment include the Clery Act compliance audit. I just recently read an article that the Department of Education increased the monetary penalty for noncompliance with that act. So we want to verify the university's reporting processes are in compliance. Another one that we are looking at is the university termination procedures. Also just a compliance piece where we want to see if we have policies in place. Are we going by those policies? Are there any state regulations that we need to be aware of? And do we have the best practices in place to reduce any legal risks related to that? The other note I wanted to point out, on the sensitive data management project, that's actually just a management review. It's not a full-blown audit. So that's more of an educational piece and just an opportunity for us to get involved with IT again and research best practices on sensitive data management. Every year I feel like this audit plan's really difficult to put together because there's so much that we haven't touched yet. Of course, you know, this is my third year, so there's so much out there that we can do. We just want to make sure that we're providing value and adding a positive impact for the university. So that's the ultimate goal. So that is my audit plan for fiscal year 17-18. That's later. That's for the end of the show. But I'll be happy to, I guess, answer questions if there are any.
Anybody have any questions? I've got one, you're in finance and administration audit twice. One is for inventory and surplus, the other is university termination procedure. Are they conducted simultaneously or are they completely separated?
Separate.
Okay. At different times?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I make a comment?
Oh, no, please.
I want to commend Jennifer Miller for the elevation of internal audit. This has been a fantastic advance in our best practices at the university, and should give all of us as regents more assurance that we're exercising our fiduciary responsibility. And thank you. And if other universities have this kind of practice, they might not have experienced some of the issues they currently have.
That's well said.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I concur wholeheartedly, as I'm sure the committee does, with that comment. Very well said, Freddie. Any other comments or questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion for approval of the 2017-18 audit plan.
So moved.
Who was that? David?
Jason.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jason. And second?
Second.
Hey, David, okay, there you go. Any other further discussions, comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Like sign? Okay. The next is something that's part of a normal process, I guess, each and every time we have a committee meeting. It's approval of personnel actions, both faculty as well as staff. Begins on page 4, but the attachments are to that particular deal. So material has already been presented. I don't know if there's any questions or comments or presentations, anything unique about this. Hearing that, I'll entertain a motion for approval of the personnel actions.
So moved.
Okay.
I second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Okay, and the third action item is acceptance of the third quarter statement of revenue and expenditures, which is in page 5-6.
As your agenda item states, we are tracking very similar to the same third quarter in last year with just a few variances. I'm pleased to see that we are having more success in our restricted funds and grants and contracts, as we are at a higher percentage of budget, which indicates that we're more likely to have received more awards. I do know from my own division in auxiliary enterprises, at some point we can come back to the committee, that we've had an exceptionally good year with the university store. We've had new leadership. We have relatively young team that has coalesced around this leadership and are pretty excited about trying new things and implementing best practices, especially as Jennifer Miller has shared with them. So it shows up in the auxiliary enterprise revenue. While it may not look that significant, it was about 81% of revenue last year, and it's at 85% of revenue. And I think that what you'll find is a good success story, that operating, you know, one of those items that people look at for outsourcing is sometimes your store. But we believe we'll be able to generate profits that will feed back into enhancing the auxiliary programs. So that was a little more than just the financial report, but I wanted to jump in and tell you that.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I noticed in the budget, operating budget, and this speaks to your point, that is a significant increase in sales, and that has to do to management. I mean, that's true, especially when you have a reduction in the number of students.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you've got
exactly
the factor that your market's smaller. But the other thing, what is Topper Corner?
Topper Corner is the gift shop that is located at Stadium Plaza downtown.
I shop there.
Well, with that point, it has only been open a short period of time.
It's been open a year, and it's had its challenges, as any entity in the retail business in downtown Bowling Green would have. So we're doing our best, but it's hard to carve out a unique market and keep it fresh enough that people keep coming back.
Question yes. About that, not to get down into the tall grass here, but I noticed that when you were talking about those profit centers, you budgeted in 16-17 267,000 and you cut it by way almost a third. Is that covering its overhead?
Chances are it's going to have to be subsidized by other funds in my division, other auxiliary
funds.
And
so at what point when you have a losing proposition do you say it's time to cut and run?
That's going to be evaluated with Jerry Katzoff, who has the lease. We're going to evaluate.
But he doesn't control whether we are in operation there or not, does he?
He controls the covering part of the debt. So he is subsidizing it. As he would like us to have a downtown presence, so we have an agreement that subsidizes it. So I anticipate once we close out this fiscal year, we'll be sitting down with him and saying, is this mutually beneficial?
He's covering operating losses on it.
So it's a net to us. I mean, we're getting the benefit of all the marketing and everything, and he's covering any shortfall.
But I don't believe a businessman is going to want to continue doing that, so we keep him apprised of our cash flow. And
our bus stops right there in front of that place. I mean, that was one of the reasons that we did that.
He now has the franchise for the Starbucks.
Starbucks started out as ours, part of our campus dining program, but that has now been transferred solely to his ownership with that franchise.
Good. I just wouldn't want
the
positive of the bookstore to be taken away from a profit center that's losing
money. We're looking to see whether that can be enhanced or otherwise we have to make a decision that it's not viable.
Thank you. I mean, since you brought it up, I thought it'd be something to...
Is the arrangement downtown restricted in terms of what they can handle? I mean, the kinds of things they can provide, or can they reach outside of their? Can they reach outside of the kinds of things that we would provide on campus and do exceptional, creative kind of things?
Are you talking about merchandise?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, we are reaching out through social media within the last week or two. I saw more about Kentucky products, Kentucky bourbon-related products.
Have restrictions.
No, we don't.
Barbara, that'd be one of the premises for doing that is for them to sell a different kind of merchandise by and large than what you find at WKU stores. So the manager of Topper Corner is, in fact, encouraged and challenged to go out and find products that make them distinctive from the WKU store. And Julie Henson, not only does she shop there, but she's been very helpful in pointing the manager to other product lines, particularly Louisville. People that are involved in unique businesses in Louisville that can provide merchandise to that store.
Well, John says I'm not buying enough. That's what the problem is. Although I take pictures of my shopping bags. Now, I've sent Ann and Dr. Ransdell pictures of my shopping bags after I've been in.
We will be reaching out to Auburn Leather, but that's
not for Julie.
Dr. Birch, we do want to have an identity that doesn't have people think that's where you just go buy your T-shirts and your sweatshirts. So we want more unique merchandise.
And Dr. Birch, my thought process always was that we would get alumni merchandise, or a little more alumni merchandise to be able to sell to the Topper on Corner, because it would be off campus. It would be someplace where people would come and walk through. That wasn't really something I really discussed with them, but there was a part of me that wanted us to be able to increase alumni merchandise that we carry. I know he's over here. I think he just heard me.
I think he heard you. We'll work on that. But it's an interesting venture, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's a lovely little store. It's lovely.
The other part of your third quarter report is as a reiteration of what I've shared with you, that we will be on track for a tuition shortfall centrally. And we, as we had presented to you before, have identified sources, one-time sources, to get us to in black by June 30th. Any questions?
Quarterly revenue and expense statement.
I apologize. Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, I'll then call for a motion of approval of the third quarterly statement of revenues and expenditures.
So moved.
Okay, I get a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Motion carries unanimously. We now have an information item, and we've already seen a part of it, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Go through the same motion. We'll talk about completed projects. We'll look at the audit calendar for the last quarter just to kind of see where we're at with the things that are still left over today. We'll get a snapshot of the annual activity that we've actually completed versus what the plan says for this fiscal year. And then I want to talk about a little bit of housekeeping things for our next meeting because there are some things that we want to look at. So, first completed plan, bad debt expense for third-party receivables only. That was an audit. The universities, the Center for Research and Development, the WKU store, the WKU Conference Center, those are some examples of what organizations or areas that might have receivables on this third-party list. And I do want to point out first that we did not do an financial audit, so we're not providing reasonable assurance that the balance of the bad debt expense is free of material misstatement. That's not what we were doing. That's what the external auditors do. So we were looking, as you can tell on our scope, the methodology used to calculate the bad debt expense for the third-party receivables. How do we do it? What's that like? And then also the third-party receivable cycle. How does it get to be a third-party receivable? How does it get to the bad debt expense? What's the process like? So with that, we had 14 recommendations. We do those high, medium, or low. Six of those were high, two were medium, and six were low. So typically, I just discuss the high-rated recommendation. So overall, most of those high recommendations were based on the need for a policy, some documentation to make this consistent throughout the audit or the accounts receivable cycle. So one of the recommendations is to develop a policy to govern the duties related to third-party receivable cycle. Within that policy, which is what the other high-level recommendations fall under, within that policy, we want to clearly define tasks and allocate those tasks to the appropriate responsible party related to those receivables. We want them to develop procedures to assist departments in collecting the outstanding balances and also to understand the write-off process and how that does not mean that we are forgiving the debt. We want an implementation of a policy that prevents additional business being conducted with vendors who have past due invoices that exceed a certain age category. We don't have that in place now, which would impact the bad debt expense over a period of time. We would like to require documentation be provided for all invoice void requests. We don't have a process in place for that right currently. And then the last high recommendation was we'd like to have a review and monitoring of the maintenance rights to the accounts receivable account detail form within the Banner system. So we have six of those, and like I said, most of that is policy, so we want to have good communication between the departments that are out on the campus or even outside of the campus, like the Center for Research and Development, to have something that they can go to make sure that we're being consistent. The second completed project, if there's no questions.
Question.
Yes.
So the word bad is pretty broad. So you do age receivables, I'm sure.
Yes.
So how bad is bad, and how big a size is an independent vendor? Are we talking about $500 or
$50,000? I don't have numbers in front of me right
just
now.
Ballpark, just general information.
Well, I'll tell you that the bad debt expense for the third-party receivables is not in my mind, material as far as the numbers go, but the process is what we're looking at. So, yeah. You might be able to say more.
I got my answer, I think.
Okay. Okay.
You know, when you say the word bad, you want to know, well, how bad is it? And you told us it's not a bad deal. I mean, it's not overdue. You're just trying to brush up the policies to prevent something from happening. Is that what we're hearing?
Well, yeah, but we looked at the calculation, and, you know, they do the aging part. So anything over, help me, because I don't remember, over a certain age is written off, or not written off, sorry, that's totally different.
Yes, I understand.
Bad debt expense, 100%.
Right.
So we're...
We're removing from the books,
that.
But it's still out there to be collected if necessary.
Yes.
If we can. Okay, and then the last thing, is there any department specific where there is an issue, or are you trying to discover that?
That didn't come up in this process audit. We weren't really looking specifically at that.
Good.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're doing policy, and we don't have an issue, and everybody's doing a good job. Is that what we're hearing?
Not exactly.
Well,
let me jump in because this is in my division, and I think it's gives me an opportunity to point something else out. Jennifer Miller and her staff, while she's accountable to me, I'm no different than any other division when it comes to doing an audit and doing it by the books and telling me what I, as a division head, need to know, which goes back to Mr. Higgins' comments about the professionalism of internal audit. So I had to receive this report from her, and what it told me in a nutshell was that the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. And you know, that's exactly what you want to find out.
Mm-hmm.
While the dollar amount, I don't know, Jim, if it's a little over $1 million for the third party across the campus. But it's the fact that departments that in fact do invoice aren't prepared to deal with people that don't pay. You know, they're in the business of delivering services, and they want happy customers. So I think what it really surfaced for me is that somebody needed to be accountable for paying. And it was a little bit that the folks in my area were thinking that the people out across campus ought to be taking care of their own delinquent accounts. So we're going to tighten up the process and ensure that those folks that actually do provide these services that they get the support they need from accounting to make sure the payments are collected. The other thing is that I'm hearing is a theme from internal audit is that we have access to our accounting system. We call it Banner. And in numerous situations, we keep hearing we need to review who, while IT does this, I'm not too certain that we have given it the proper attention, and I know in my area about getting detailed reports that say who has access to what file. Well, what I think you're talking about is an example of who might be able to go in there and void a bad debt or what looks like an uncollectible. So we're improving our processes, and the two of you here today hit by division, but they're well deserved and will improve. I hope that helps.
Yeah, it does. Somewhat. Thank you, Ann. So if I understand, Ann, it's about $1 million campus-wide. Is it all from auxiliary services or auxiliary enterprises, or is it broadly based everywhere?
It's broadly based everywhere.
So what would you think from auxiliary enterprises it might be?
I really don't know.
The point I was making is $1 million, if it's even broad, that's a 4% of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're trying to tighten up, that would
be a place.
And so that's the reason I was trying to get to the word as bad as is it bad. So.
Yeah, I don't know those numbers to tell you.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Ann, you might want to stand up again.
If I might add one thing, Mr. Ridley, that $1 million I think that Ann referred to was the total amount of that receivable, not the amount that's being written off or that's considered.
Oh, well, that is a big difference then.
Yeah.
If your receivables are only $1 million and it floats at $1 million, that's a different issue.
Correct. Yeah, the bad debt part of that is much smaller.
Much smaller. Good. Bad is not bad.
Bad is not always bad.
Thank you.
Okay. So the second completed project, we actually, on the audit plan, we had this listed as one line. But when we came to talk about the different aspects of it during our pre-planning meetings that we do, we decided to break it out into two. So we had the bad debt expense for third-party receivables, and separately we wanted to look at the student receivables bad debt expense. So that's the second project that we did. With that one, my pages are messed up. We had, that's not right. I am so sorry. We don't have 14 on that one.
No, sir.
We have 5. So I did not update that. I apologize. So the results of the student receivables, we had 5 recommendations, and only one of those was considered high. The same scope was used. We looked at the methodology, looked at the student receivables cycle, did a flow chart and walked through everything like that. So with that, the high recommendation, as Ann had mentioned before, is the review and monitoring of the student account detail form in our banner system.
Same question. If student retention, here's my point about this one. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
No, please go.
But I believe the committee is meeting is the time to ask these things.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's supposed to be a working committee.
And right.
So one or two meetings ago, we talked about scholarships and where we had funds and so forth, and by retention, we were talking about what is the difference that keeps somebody in school, and sometimes it's a very insignificant number. So with that, if there is a pocket of money that we can assist these students and bad debt is coming up and getting them out, them walking, is that a severe problem or is it not?
Well,
it's a rhetorical question for you to look at. But
right.
if there is a marriage between bad debt and retention, any way that there's a relationship, where can we find funds to assist the bad debt to keep them in school? But we've got to research all of those little pockets to see if there is a triggering factor that we can keep them successful.
Right. Well, as part of this process, our bursar's office is very much into trying to help these students and
that.
Provide plans for them to pay
that.
Off this
payment
debt.
Plans. I know all
yes.
that. Yes.
And some of those medium and low recommendations include changes to the actual documentation that they send to students to let them know, you know, this is what's available for you. Call us. We can help you. So that's some of those other recommendations that we have
Good.
Out there.
Good. Thank you. But I think we need to work very closely with the recruitment retention group to make sure that lots of good communication is going on about these programs of assistance.
Right. Yeah.
Really, your question is a really good one, and maybe it needs to be extended a little of what we need to look at. And I guess Dr. Meredith probably has some of those answers too. But that is the extent to which inability to pay, period, is the reason that we may be losing students.
Could be.
To what extent is
no
that the retention? I mean, I know it's some of it, but I don't know how much of it is, and that would be an important thing to know.
Well, it really will be an economic and time-based study. I mean, if it's 6 students out of 20,000, we can't focus a lot of resources on that. But if it's several students and it's a small number, then we need to put a lot of focus to make sure that we keep these guys. So, anyway, finances drive a lot of this, and I appreciate you.
You and I talked about it, I think, too. There's not a day or an hour goes by that we don't get anywhere from $1,200, $1,500, $1,600 to save the students, get them, they get some square back up, and then they cycle on through and throw them away. That's every day. It's every day, and many times every hour of the day. Work with Belinda Shop and our hand shop with Belinda Financial Aid to balance that out, because usually they're short about $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
The discretionary scholarships kick in, and it saves them. So it's not that much to save them, but over time that adds up.
Well, in that retention, even if you get somebody trued up in 1 year from a bad debt or a mistake they made, and it makes them succeed, we carried the revenue for 3 more years if it was a freshman or 2. And then we've got a successful alumnus on there that then becomes a great contributor to the Alumni Association and to the university. So, I mean, these critical dollar amounts in these early stages are extremely important. And It's sometimes it's picking up pennies to save dollars.
Right.
So, thank you.
Before you leave that one, Jennifer, the most profound dynamic in this particular audit is the significant improvement since we began partnering with the Department of Revenue and student debt collections. We don't write off a student debt until a student has left, gone, no longer here, yet they owe money, and that's where the bad debt expense for student receivables surfaces. We began working with the Department of Revenue in 2014, made the decision in 2013, began working with the Department of Revenue in 2014. So 2013, zero debt collection from the Department of Revenue. 2016, $718,462 in debt collections through the Department of Revenue. So that means that with other collections, we're now up just under $800,000 in debt collections that we were not capturing just 3 years ago. Good move. And Jim, anybody that was involved with partnering with the Kentucky Department of Revenue to go after collection of debt collection that we've already written off.
Right. Yes.
That is now coming back into our financial portfolio. So that's that dynamic in this particular audit. That's the first time I've seen those numbers. So that's encouraging. Because that's hard debt to collect.
Yes.
It sure is.
Once you've already written it off. But that helps.
Yes, it does.
Thank you, Dr. Ansel. That's very important.
Yes.
Thank you.
So this is just a snapshot of the quarter that we're in now, and right now what's in progress is the study abroad, study away safety audit, and also the study abroad, study away process audit, so just an operational audit from their standpoint. And then you see the inventory control surplus, which has not been started and is rolling forward to the new audit plan. And then the three things that we continue to do throughout the year, not just when 1 month, but we continue to do the ProCard compliance reviews and analysis. We do the surprise change fund audits and counts, and ComFuel cards. We've been doing some work with the process owners of the ComFuel cards to make sure that they're putting good policies in place. They started to revamp that actual procedures with the ComFuel card, so we've been doing some having some assistance with that, which has helped to make sure that when we come to audit that they're going to have everything that they need so that we can get that information from them. This is just a snapshot as required by the standards that we go by. I'm required to tell you what the year looked like based on the actual plan that we had versus the actual activity that we did. And currently we're at 80% complete of the audit plan with 20% lacking, which you kind of saw those 20% on the slide before. So for next time, review and approve the internal audit charter. The internal audit charter was first established in August of 2013, and it has not been through a review process by the Finance and Budget Committee since it was put into place. And so that type of review is also required by the standards that we go by, the international standards for the professional practice of internal audit. So I'll be bringing that to the table next time so we can look at that. I want to make sure that charter has everything in it that's also laid out in the standards. So we want to make sure that it's complete. The next thing would be the year-end review. That will include the survey results that we implemented last year. Was our first year to actually survey our clients to find out if they had a good experience with internal audit, find out what we can do to improve our process for them. So we'll have those results hopefully to share with you, and then also we'll talk about the follow-up process and where we're at with the audits that have been done in the past. And then, of course, the quarterly report, as usual, with any completed projects that we talked about. So that is it.
Any other questions, comments? Anyone?
have a comment.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. There's a comment over there in the corner.
I just want to thank everyone for being so supportive. You're very complimentary, and I appreciate that because it gives us, you know, hope that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing and having a positive impact. So thank you. But I also want to personally thank Dr. Rainsdale for being so supportive. And I'm not going to cry. I just want to thank you because you have been so supportive, and that really speaks to the tone at the top for internal audit, because it's not an easy place to be sometimes. So I appreciate everything. When I send him emails with the reports attached saying please review, he always says, I will study it. Thanks, Gary. Sorry, I never call you Gary. And I'll miss that. So thank you so much. I really do appreciate you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that's the Finance and Budget Committee meeting.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Well, Regents, that concludes our committee agenda for June 23rd.
Chairman, I have a personal comment I'd like to make. I think we all should be indebted to you. I'm very appreciative of Mr. Frederick Higdon's service as chairman of this board for two terms, which he will not be able to do going forward. He has been a true alumnus. He has been a true leader. He's been a dear friend to us all. And stood as the leader when it wasn't popular and when it was. And that is the sign of a great person. And I want to thank you personally and for this board. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It has been my pleasure and honor to serve, and most importantly, to have the fellowship and friendship with all of you all. And can truly say that to a person, all of our interests has always been the best interest of Western Kentucky. So it's been a real honor, and thank you, John, for those comments.
Okay.
Anything else? We're adjourned.